Welcome to Whiskey Shenanigans. I'm your host, Randy Warren. Whiskey Shenanigans, where we help our listeners experience the world of whiskey, every aspect of life, as if it were accompanied by a glass of bourbon. Sports world on whiskey, entertainment on whiskey, politics, art, the NFL draft, finance, and basically every part of life on whiskey. Whiskey Shenanigans is about getting exclusive interviews from Bourbon Row in Kentucky, where we can learn about the secrets that make our favorite bourbons unique. Whiskey Shenanigans is about going beyond just boring podcasts featuring tastings. Heck, what do you get out of that anyway? It's about bringing on guests and experiencing the entire world through whiskey. But be warned, if you're diving in and want to participate in these riveting discussions, you will want to grab a glass or a dram and be prepared to be entertained. Today, we have the honor of coming to you live from Warren's American Whiskey Kitchen in Naples, Florida. Warren's has two locations, one in Miami and one in Naples. Has this really cool speakeasy that I'm podcasting from. You should see this place. It's unbelievable. What a selection. What a place to hang out. And the bourbon here is second to none. They literally have everything I've ever thought of about bourbon. And some darn good steak, too. We are going to start out today with a segment about Whiskey Row, part two from our previous episode. But we're going to follow that up quickly by a seriously awesome segment with Harlan Wheatley, master distiller of Buffalo Trace, where we are going to reveal the upcoming secret expressions that they are working on. And we're going to find out why their whiskey is so good. So hang on for that. And now begins the second part of the segment that we call Whiskey Row, about our trip to Kentucky and visit to many of the major distilleries there. In this part two, we cover a few more facts and interesting things regarding what makes a bourbon. We know that bourbon, all bourbon is whiskey, but not all whiskey is bourbon. Okay. Last time we talked about the fact that if it's going to be a bourbon, it has to be a minimum 51% corn in the makeup or mash bill, as they call it. Second, it has to be made in the USA, not only in Kentucky, but anywhere in the USA. There are a few other requirements that make a bourbon a bourbon. There are some proof requirements or alcohol requirements. In order to be a bourbon, after the distilling process, the liquid, which we call white lightning, needs to be about 160 proof after it's distilled. When it goes into the barrel, it needs to be about 125 proof or less. Once in the barrel, it needs to be aged a minimum of 2 years. Most are aged quite a bit longer. If aged less than four, it has to be labeled. But typically, they're aged quite a bit more than four. Some of the better ones are aged 15 to 20 years. There can be no additives. Additives were a serious problem in the early days of distilling in Kentucky, as moonshiners would put nearly anything into their white lightning as filler, even petroleum, oil, horrible things that would really make you sick. The words bottled in bond on the label mean that there are no additives and that the U.S. government has verified that there are no additives by watching the warehouses and the distilling processes. And there are a few barrel requirements as well. Barrels have to be new oak barrels, and typically they are charred with fire to release the flavor and caramelized wood and vanilla so that the whiskey put into the barrel can soak that up. The charring process is fired about 500 to 600 degrees. And in Kentucky, they talk about charring level 1, 2, 3, and 4. The higher the number, the longer the charring process. The longer the charring process, the more caramelized wood and vanilla you get out of the barrel. You get more smoky flavors as well. And just so you know, about 80% of the color and the flavor of the whiskey, of the bourbon, comes from the barrel process. The liquid goes into the barrel completely clear, white lightning, but it comes out beautiful yellow bourbon. During the aging process, these barrels are stored in what they call rickhouses. Most of the rickhouses tend to be in Bardstown, Kentucky. They typically have about 7 or 8 levels or stories where they stack the barrels. We drove by some of these rick houses and walked through quite a few as well. They're huge, and you wonder, how in the world do they move these barrels around? Maybe they don't move them around at all. But inside of a rick house, the top barrels are definitely going to be exposed to more heat in the summertime, and the bottom barrels will be the coolest in the summertime. So there are some distilleries that focus on moving the barrels around, but it seems like most do not. So when you see a bottle that's marked single barrel in the bourbon store, essentially, you're getting a bourbon that came out of one barrel, not mixed with any other barrel. Without a doubt, some barrels are going to be absolutely much better than others, and a lot of that is due to the position of the barrel in the rickhouse. Finally, we want to talk about finishing. Finishing is the process of what happens after you've spent, the barrel spent 4, 5, 6, 10 years in the original new oak charred barrel. Many distilleries will use a second barrel to finish their product. For example, Angel's Envy uses a second barrel that was previously used for storing port wine. So as you can imagine, the whiskey inside the port wine barrel is going to soak up a lot of new flavors. Some distilleries, such as Maker's Mark, use what they call staves. And I'm not talking about a single sliver of wood. I'm talking 4, 5, 6, up to 10 different pieces of wood that they'll take and put into the barrel to add additional flavors. Each stave is unique in the flavors that it adds to the whiskey. So combining them together is an art form to create a perfect set of flavors. While I was at Woodford, I saw barrels that had been aged for nearly 20 years. They had some 1996 barrels, and today it's 2025, so that's 29 years of aging. You have to wonder, especially if you're a chemistry buff, instead of keeping the original liquid in one barrel for 20 years, wouldn't it be better if you swapped it to a second barrel, maybe even a third barrel? In the last episode, I mentioned that we bought a triple oak Angel's Envy. What does that mean? And why should I pay more for it, twice as much as regular Angel's Envy? What it means is that they took the original whiskey out of the original barrel after many years. They put it into the first finishing barrel for a few months, then a second barrel, helping it to further soak up the flavor. Finally, moving it to yet a third finishing barrel and soaking up even more flavors. It seems pretty obvious that this is going to end up with a pretty nice, mellow, vanilla, caramel whiskey. I wonder if 3 barrels are good, maybe 5 are better. I suppose it's theoretically possible to over-oak a bourbon and make it too woody, but I haven't really seen that in practice. If 5 barrels are good, maybe 10 is better. I don't know, it's just a thought. Maybe we should use staves to finish. I don't know. All these things and all these questions, processing, ideas, all about finishing the whiskey. It's truly the art of blending flavors together to make a fine, drinkable bourbon. And maybe, just maybe, we should ask an expert. We're going to bring in our next guest. And now, live from Kentucky, we have the honor of joining our show, the master distiller from Buffalo Trace, Harlan Wheatley. Harlan has been master distiller at Buffalo Trace since 2005, overseeing the production of some of the most sought-after bourbons in the world. Okay, listeners, if you don't know about Buffalo Trace, that's understandable because for the most part, in a lot of parts of the country, you can't even buy it in the store. Not even Total Wine, which usually has everything. But when you can buy it, okay, it's real good. And it's not expensive. You also may or may not know that Buffalo Trace is part of a group of fine whiskeys, including Eagle Rare, E.H. Taylor, Weller's, Blanton's, and Pappy Van Winkle. Welcome, Harlan. So we have with us today the master distiller of Buffalo Trace, Harlan Wheatley. He has held this position since, 2005, Harlan?
2005, yep.
2005. Only the 6th. Master distiller, right? Since the Civil War?
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I've started in the industry, pretty much right out of college. We, in 1995, I came into the industry, and it was a little bit different times back then. You know, there wasn't a lot of distilleries in the country. There's probably 6 or 7 total making various whiskeys, and people were looking for business, and, you know, the cocktail craze hadn't hit yet, and yeah. People were just learning about bourbons, and, you know, I used to do a lot of tastings back then, and I would go out, educational things, and
right.
We'd do a lot of traveling, going around, talking about, hey, this is called bourbon, you know?
You're kidding.
And we'd go around to these bars, and we'd say, we got this new bourbon called Buffalo Trace. And the bars would say, you know what? We don't need any more bourbon. We're good, you know? And we go on to the next one with our little suitcase and sell bottles one at a time. And we would get excited about selling a couple of cases and stuff. And anyway, that was, seems like forever ago. However, it wasn't that long ago to me, you know. I was talking to a guy and he said, you know, it's been 2.5 decades. And wow. I'm like, well, I guess that's true. It's been 3 decades, really. I've seen the industry change, and, you know, it's been fun. We luckily were also planning to expand at the same time. I mean, we had big plans, and
yeah.
Luckily for us, the industry kind of followed along, and the cocktail craze, people yep. started appreciating bourbon, understanding the history and the connection to the country, and all the things that people appreciate when they buy a good whiskey.
And all that work, you know, earned you a few accolades, I assume.
Yeah, they, along the way, and we're, you know, we measure that, but we like getting awards because it shows that we're doing some of the right things, you know.
Yeah.
And we look, you know, look for that every year and try to understand what people like and don't like. And, you know, we kind of watch the industry of course, things are always changing, and one of our mottos is to embrace change, you know, honor our legacy and embrace change. And if you don't do that, we've learned over the years, you know, you're going to fall behind, right? So
right. And you yourself have gotten a few awards. I think you're a James Beard Award nominee a few times, right?
Yeah, I mean, that comes along with the territory, I always say. I mean, we've got a lot of really great brands, and people appreciate the work that the whole team has done. We've got 770 employees Whew. At the distillery, so everybody does their part, you know, and I do mine, but we've got a lot of really talented new people and old people, you know, all kinds of really good people here, so it just shows the hard work pays off, you know.
Yeah, what inspired the name Buffalo Trace? Tell the listeners, because they might not know. I mean, I was out there just a few weeks ago, and, you know, I learned about it, but I was like, oh, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, Buffalo Trace is, you know, before 1999, when you came to the distillery, you did not really know where you had been, because we didn't really have a flagship brand, and, you know, we had a lot of different brands and logos around and things. And, you know, we had a little discussion and said, look, you know, we got to have a flagship brand. We got to represent the distillery. We got to honor the legacy of this facility that's been here for 240 plus years. And, so we got to looking at the history, and the reason this distillery is here is because the Buffalo crossed the Kentucky River at this site and forged a trail or a trace. And, of course, people naturally settled along that trace. And the first settlement, really, in Kentucky, one of the first settlements in Kentucky is the Leestown Settlement. And that's right where we were, or where we are now.
Right.
And the first thing they did was put up a still, like any good settlement would. And the rest is history. I mean, we started with a little small operation and continued to grow, and I always tell, like, the we are a national historic landmark. We're a working national historic landmark,
right.
And we have those meetings every so often, and I talk to that group, and I say, you know, we really haven't changed since 1700s, right? We're continuing to expand and grow, and we built a couple buildings last year with our latest expansion.
Right.
And, you know, we're just continuing to grow, you know.
So how did all these additional, I mean, you have a number of additional brands. You've got the Eagle Rare, the E.H. Taylor, the Wellers, the Pappy. How did all that kind of come about, and where's it going next?
Yeah, we continue to realize there's a few things we try to keep consistent, and one of them is to have a lot of variety for our consumers and customers. And we know that maybe not everybody likes rye bourbon. Maybe some people like wheat bourbon. Some people like rye whiskey and so on. So we knew that early on that we need to have something that represents each of those categories within those each of those categories. So rye whiskey, different varieties of rye whiskey, different varieties of wheat. And Pappy Van Winkle, for example, is a great example. You take one recipe and then age it differently, you know, age it up all the way up. We released one that was 25 years old.
Wow.
And we start out with a 10-year-old for Pappy. And then we also have the Weller line, which is a weeded bourbon, which starts out at about 7 years. So we go from 7 to 25 years and offer all these different labels with that recipe. And we take, right now we have 12 recipes that we utilize to make all these different varieties that we have. And, you know, we try to match consumers' taste to the brands. And for us, we know that's important because you want to keep all the customers happy, you know.
Is that 6 different mash bills?
It's 12. Or we have 12.
12
different.
12 different. And
yep.
Are there any different yeasts or anything like that?
Well, we do a few things consistently, and one of the things we don't do at Buffalo Trace is change our yeast.
Okay.
We only have one yeast that we utilize for all of our whiskeys and vodka, and then we also only have one standard for a barrel. So we do a number 4 char barrel, 6-month aged wood, and we try to keep those consistent across the labels.
Number 4 is about, what, a minute and 15 seconds? Or?
Yeah, it's about 55 seconds for us.
55 seconds,
yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you char that thing, the inside of it, and that brings out all the vanilla and the flavors and everything like that.
Yeah, it comes off the still crystal clear. And not, you know, some people don't realize that the color comes from the barrel. And as it ages, it extracts really good flavors from the oak that's been charred properly.
Right.
And then you got to age it properly, right? So we do some things differently in our warehouses. We heat our warehouses, and we have multiple floors.
Okay.
So it allows us to have, again, that variety of flavors that comes out of the warehouse.
Right. And do you move the barrels around once they're in there? Or are the barrels, you know, the position of the barrel helps to determine how, you know, how it's
right.
going to taste?
One of the things that sets us apart too is that we have the oldest inventory in the business, because, you know, most people don't want to the responsibility, I should say, of aging bourbon multiple years. You know, we go 10, 15, 20, 25, and we're continuing to explore ultra-aged products, but it's a lot of responsibility, a lot of cost and all that, but we don't rotate barrels because we want that variety of flavor. And
right.
If you rotate it, you know, you're kind of leaning toward making the same flavor.
Right.
So we leave those barrels, and plus we have millions of barrels, right? So it's not a really a practical thing to say that you're going to rotate the barrels, but we like having that variety to pick based on all the different, I mean, we have 48 plus, I've kind of lost track, 48 plus of different varieties of whiskeys to offer, right? So
wow.
It's nice to have those to pick from.
So you're probably pretty familiar, I would say very familiar, maybe the most familiar with what's in what rickhouse and where the barrels are and what level they're being stored at and all that. And when you're thinking about building a whiskey or you're saying, all right, we need to make an Eagle Rare today, you know, it's like, you know where to go to get the right combination Are you mixing these together? How's that work?
Well, part of the magic of making really good whiskey or bourbons is the blending process, right? Is, you know, if you go get 200 or 300 barrels or whatever of a certain recipe and want to make a batch, you got to make sure that you don't get all from the same floor, for example. You want to get a good variety to mix that and blend those together and make that a good tasting bourbon. So, you know, we take our time and make sure that we pick based on anticipated use, we call it. And we know that, you know, you can't go to the top floor of a warehouse and get a 25-year-old bourbon. You know, it's going to be so over-oaked that, you know, it'd be too much.
Right.
So we have, because of our 240-plus years, we have a long history of knowing what each floor produces, and we're able to go out and select barrels based on, you know, what we think the taste will be, and blend those together.
And do you have a tasting panel that helps you out with all this?
Oh, yeah. We have a pretty robust, I should say, tasting panel where I think we have 35 qualified tasters.
Wow, 35.
Because, yeah, and it takes a while. It takes about a year to get qualified, and that assumes you can do it. I mean, you have to pass the test, and,
right. You
know, it's pretty in-depth. But once you get on that panel, then, you know, we utilize that panel for all these. I mean, we taste hundreds of samples a day, right? And single barrels are a big thing for us. We taste every single barrel, and we have to have 100% agreement that the product is ready for bottling. And, you know, we utilize that. So
now, just out of curiosity, what I've noticed, interestingly enough, there's a lot of women on these tasting panels as I was traveling around Kentucky and going to distilleries. Are there more women than men on your panel, or are there more men than women?
I would say that we are pretty split down the middle. I haven't polled that just because, you know, we don't really base it on that, but
but it's interesting.
It's probably,
right? I think 50-50 women are good at this.
Yeah, a lot of, you know, what we have found, women or men, it doesn't matter, but what we have found is some people can taste certain things over others.
Right.
And what we do is, based on, say, those 35 people, we know, okay, Joe is really good at tasting vanilla or whatever. And so we some people are good at certain things, and some people can't taste, you know, they won't pick up certain things. So we know,
right,
like, if we're looking for a strong vanilla, then we won't use Sally because she's not as good at tasting vanilla as Joe is, right?
Right.
So we do rate the tasters based on what they can and cannot taste. So
that's
amazing. You know, God's gift, right?
It really is. I mean, obviously, I've tasted a lot of bourbons, and it, you know, I mean, I always pick up the vanilla and the caramel. Those are like always come out strong. And then people are like, "Well, what about the you know the cherry? What about the this?" I'm like, I don't taste any of that. I just taste the vanilla and the caramel. Just comes out.
You know, I'm kind of always, I guess, because of a lot of practice, but you know, I'm able to take into consideration what you're tasting, what you had for breakfast. You know, there's a lot of variables that you have to take into account.
Absolutely. That's so interesting how you put that all together. And so in the innovation area, one thing I wanted to ask about was this Buffalo Trace OFC. And what's that about, and why is it special?
Well, what makes it special, it's kind of pays homage to our history, first of all. We've got a long history with OFC brand. That was one of our distilleries, right? We had multiple names at several points in our history, but OFC was one of them, and we still have an OFC stamped on the side of one of our warehouses. But, you know, that's the first thing. And then the way we did it, we wanted to use vintage, is that the right word? but we wanted to use annual releases to show, you know, what that time period was like. And so we do that annually. We try to do it annually. We release these older vintages, and, you know, it's been something pretty special, and it's a special bottle because it's a, we always say last drop or one, you know, the last bit of liquid on the planet, right? You can't get, you can't replace this stuff. You can't keep making it, you know, because once it's done, like we did a 1990, I mean, we started that at what, 1980, what was the first one, 88 or 89, and we, you know, you can't make any more of that, so it's over.
So they're not making it. And that's so interesting. So this is it. I mean, that's why it's so rare and so special.
Each year we come out with a new vintage, right? So we did an 89, a 90, and a 92, and a 95, and, you know.
And what's happening between then and now? It can't still be aging in barrels, right? Or can it?
Well, before we let Harlan, the master distiller from Buffalo Trace, answer the question about, is Buffalo Trace putting together a 50-year-old bourbon? We want to remind you, today we have the honor of coming to you live from Warren's American Whiskey Kitchen in Naples, Florida. Warren's has two locations, one in Miami and one in Naples. Has this really cool speakeasy that I'm podcasting from. You should see this place. It's unbelievable. What a selection. What a place to hang out. And the bourbon here is second to none. They literally have everything I've ever thought of about bourbon, and some darn good steak, too. As we rejoin the conversation with Harlan Wheatley, the master distiller from Buffalo Trace, keep in mind the genesis of Buffalo Trace. Ancient Buffalo carved paths through the wilderness that led American pioneers and explorers to new frontiers. One such trail led to the banks of the Kentucky River, where Buffalo Trace Distillery has been making bourbon whiskey the same way for more than 200 years, in tribute to the mighty buffalo and the rugged, independent spirit of the pioneers who followed them. Buffalo Trace created their signature Buffalo Trace Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Start the journey. Now, Harlan, tell us about that 50-year-old bourbon.
Well, we could, but most of that was tanked product that did not age any further, because if it did, it would be over-oaked.
Right.
But, yeah, we are exploring that. You know, if Scotch can make a 50-year-old Scotch in a barrel, our belief is you can make a 50-year-old bourbon. Now, we can't use traditional techniques to make a 50-year-old bourbon, because if you tried, it would evaporate and you wouldn't have anything left. It would be an empty barrel.
Yeah.
So we're looking at, you know, what kind of techniques do you have to use to do that?
That would be interesting to make that happen. What other experimental, you know, combinations and things like that are you working with?
Well, That's a good question, and we don't say a lot about the future, but just because we're trying to, you know, keep our competitors guessing.
Sure, but don't tell us anything too secret, man.
Yeah, we have about 4,000 barrels of inventory of experimental bourbons and whiskeys, and we look at everything from recipe to distillation to you know, aging techniques to the different types of wood and all these, every single variable you can, the environment, every single variable you can think of, we're looking at, or at least we try to. And
sure.
If you come up with something, here's the way that works. Let's say you come up with something we're not doing. We stick it on a list, because we have a list of about 450 items, and it's a lifetime. It's more than a lifetime of work. There's no way
sure.
we can do it all. But let's say you come up with something that's really, you know, something we haven't just heard of.
Right.
And we stick it on the list, and then we review that list every 6 months. And as a group, we have an experimental group of about 40 people. And we look at that as a group, and we say, you know what, that'd be pretty interesting. Let's move that up the list to number two or whatever.
Right.
And then we put that into the schedule and, you know, get it out there. So we try to... one of the, kind of the motto on that is we always have something in the hopper.
Right.
You know?
I understand you might be working on a peated bourbon.
We did do a peated bourbon. and we released it. We actually had some in a bottle, and I think it turned out pretty, you know, I really liked it. It had just enough of the smoke to give it that extra hint of flavor, and I liked it a lot. Now, a traditionalist would say, because I went to Scotland one time, and I'm doing a tasting for bourbon, you know, and as I do, and I'm standing there, and the guy sitting in the audience had a skirt on, which was odd to me, but, you know, they do that.
They do
and,
that.
They do that. So he said, "Boy, you can't make whiskey out of corn." And I said, "Well, we've been doing it for 200 plus years, so we're going to continue to do that." And he goes, "The street that you walked in on was 2,000 years old. Don't talk to me about old." You know, he's just real contrary. But one of the things I said to him was, you know, it's okay to like both.
Yeah.
It's okay to like scotch, and it's okay to like bourbon. You don't have to pick one or the other, you know.
Right.
But anyway, that's...
And that's me, honestly. I go back and forth. You know, I love bourbon. Bourbon's probably my favorite, but I've been to Scotland. About 18 months ago, I visited 27 different distilleries in Scotland, just touring around, tasting all the, and really trying to get the stuff that wasn't very common in the United States. Because,
right.
you know, I can walk into any liquor store and buy whatever bottle of whatever, but I was looking for things that were a little unusual or unique and trying to rate them and come up with interesting thoughts on what they're making.
I mean, they've got just the same history that we have, right? I mean, it's interesting and they're all a little different. And you can appreciate what they're doing just because of what we're doing, you know. And so, you know, perfectly fine. I've done it before. We've done intense scotch tastings where, you know, I pick out the things that I like based on. But my point on that is you have to have an open mind. You can't be, I mean, my opinion is you don't be too rigid on, I mean, some people don't like to change. So if you're offering a peated bourbon, sometimes it might, you know, not be perfect for a traditionalist. But if you have a little open mind and want a little different flavor, it's perfect.
How about hops? Have you released anything with hops?
We did. We did a hopped bourbon. And, again, it was the same scenario, actually, as the peated. But a little bit different. Had that little hoppy, you know, flavor.
Right.
And I liked it. It was something different. And... I think a lot of people did like it, so we may make
chemists,
more of it. We'll
see. The chemists love this. This is like a chemist's dream, mixing all these things together and coming up with unique tastes and flavors.
Well, the thing about that one in particular was that it's endless possibilities, right? I mean, with the different hops, and there's just an endless possibility. So we tried to pick a couple of pretty traditional hops. But, you know, that you're right, that is a... There's millions of combinations that you can, you know, so like I said, it's a lifetime of work that you can figure out what to do. Is you just have to prioritize it and figure out what people are interested in and what we always say is, what is the purpose of the experiment? Are we going to learn something about making us better distillers, which that's a plus?
Good.
Or are we going to learn something about a flavor? We're going to maybe create a new flavor.
Right.
You know, that's what makes it pretty exciting.
I was at a brewery in Delaware, believe it or not, and, you know, it was Dogfish Head, and they were doing so many different experiments. I was laughing. I'm like, I think they would stick dirty socks in the thing if it would add a certain flavor that was interesting.
You know, well,
just about anything.
He actually inspired one of our experiments because, he looked up one time the pyramids, and on the hieroglyphics on the pyramids, they talked about making a beer. And so I think Dogfish ended up making some beer, tried to replicate that or whatever. And, you know, I got to looking at that and I said, well, you know, there's no difference. You know, we might as well try to make a bourbon out of similar thoughts. So we went back and got the original strain of Emmer wheat, and you know, it's thousands of years old.
Wow.
And then we made some bourbon with it.
Wow. What's your favorite? What do you like to drink when you sit down on a Friday night and you're relaxing in front of the television? Yeah. Maybe you're watching a ball game or who knows what. What do you like?
Yeah, Friday nights are usually interesting because that's usually a long week, and hopefully the Reds are playing.
Yeah,
I get to watch the Reds, but you know we try to make some interesting cocktails. I usually use either Buffalo Trace or Eagle Rare. Those are my two go-tos.
Yep.
And we have a bourbon godfather with amaretto and bourbon. My wife makes a pretty good old-fashioned. She got that recipe from the Marriott Hotels in New York City, and it's the best old-fashioned I've ever had.
Smoke it for you?
No, I don't like that smoke stuff, but she makes the simple syrup just like the Marriott does, they just have a really good ratio of stuff, and it's good.
Right. Sometimes that's the key, the simple syrup. I mean, you know, just like what you're putting into it makes it real interesting.
Yep.
So, and lastly, before we go, don't want to keep you too long, but tell us a little bit about the flood. I was there when the flood was happening. I was at Buffalo Trace the day before things got real ugly, believe it or not.
Yeah.
I was touring all the distilleries and everything like that. And, you know, I'm there and I'm like, oh, okay, I'm coming back tomorrow for my tour. And then there was no tomorrow.
Right.
All of a sudden.
Well, it's the worst flood we've ever seen in all of our history. And it really took a lot out of us.
Yeah.
We had about every building we had 5 or 6 feet of water in it.
Wow, five or six feet.
Yeah, a lot of buildings. We had a few buildings that went all the way up to the rafters. I mean, it was complete disaster, right? So all of our electronics, we basically had to rewire the entire distillery.
Oh, man.
And we had hundreds of people working on getting us back in action. And we had to totally redo our gift shop, like I said, all of our electric and several of our buildings. Our office building got wiped out. People are still out of the office. And still working on that, but in my opinion, we got back pretty quickly. We did some partial, reservation only tours probably within 2 weeks. I mean, we had some, makeshift gift shop going and, you know, we just made the best out of it. And, we're fully operational now in the distillery and, the gift shop is fully operational, but not done yet. We're still making improvements. We got, you know, we had to order some new shelving and all this different kind of stuff. So, but we're back and we've got the tours are open and, you know, we're back in action. So
that's really good to hear. I'm glad to hear it. I missed mine. I got to come back again. So, you know, hey, that's fine. That's fine with me. I love coming back and, you know, hopefully bump into you.
Yep. I'll be here.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time today. I really appreciate it. For educating us about Buffalo Trace because, oh, man, that is some really, really fine bourbon. And we appreciate it. Thank you very much. And there you have it. Once and for all, the final, definitive truth about Buffalo Trace, E.H. Taylor, Eagle Rare. Blanton's, Weller's, George T. Stagg, Van Winkle, Sazerac Rye, and so much more. Why do they have so many brands? Why is their whiskey so good? And don't miss our next episode of Whiskey Shenanigans, where we'll have more guests, more experts, more master distillers, more games, more fun, and more reveals about what makes a bourbon so good.